Hey, everyone. Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.
Radio studios in downtown South Bend.
Let's go! Come on!
Welcome to Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Wow, don't blink. A lot of major intestinal fortitude going on here.
On your home for Notre Dame football.
Knocked down by Wooden. The game is over. The Irish is upset. Florida State, Notre Dame is number one.
And Notre Dame basketball.
Number one ranked UCLA Bruins have been upset.
National championship for Notre Dame.
Plus, Fighting Irish hockey.
They score! Jake Evans scores! Notre Dame, 3.7 seconds away from a spot in the national championship game.
The NFL and Major League Baseball.
Oh my gracious, how about that?
Sports Radio 960 WSBT, WSBTRadio.com. The free WSBT radio app.
Big time onions!
Now, here's your host, seven-time Associated Press Broadcasting Award winner, Darren Pritchett.
And I'm joined by Eric Hansen, a Hall of Fame writer, publisher, editor at InsideIndySports.com. He covers Notre Dame athletics as a big part of the Rivals Network. And if you're on Twitch right now, I mean, does Eric look like he could go to Augusta National right now? He has a beautiful green dress shirt on for day one of the Masters. I'm sure that's absolutely coincidence, right?
It is, and I can golf clap too.
Well, I'm sorry, your microphone's got switched.
It is, and I can golf clap too.
There you go. The Masters underway, got off to a bit of a delayed start due to some poor weather down in Augusta, but they're underway right now.
They gave the poor weather to us.
Yeah, no kidding. Bryson DeChambeau from LIV Golf leads with a 7-under par 65 today. Three players right now at minus four, including Scottie Scheffler on the course, Will Zalatoris on the course, and Danny Willett, a former champion, had a 68 today. Tiger, I think, is on hole four or five at this particular time, so we'll keep you updated on that. And we will talk plenty of golf with my good friend Tim Firestone, the owner of Blackthorn Golf Club, at 6:10 tonight. We'll talk about Blackthorn. We will talk about day one of the Masters. By the way, it's beautiful now. Bright sunshine down at Augusta. The winds are howling, which is causing a lot of issues for the players, as you would expect, but the sun is out, and you're playing Augusta National. There are a lot worse things in the world. Eric and I are talking Notre Dame football, including we're going to play back some comments from quarterback coach Gino Gaduli. He's having fun this spring working with four quarterbacks, three on the field and one, I guess, in the film room. So we'll have that conversation in a little bit. We will go through some of the questions Eric was asked in his Notre Dame football chat at InsideIndySports.com yesterday at noon. Let's start with a couple of headlines, and it involves Notre Dame basketball, both teams. This was a shocker. Marcus Burton has put his name in the NBA draft. The 5'11 freshman guard of Notre Dame who played at Penn High School, of course. But I think the drama and the excitement level that you might be having stops there, because, Eric, this just seems like the classic. I had a really, really good year, and I'm just going to have the NBA executives and scouts analyze my game, and they're going to tell me what I need to improve on, because it just doesn't seem like he is a player that would be drafted at this particular time. This seems like he is searching for information. Is that the way you look at it?
That's the way I look at it because I read it in Tyler James's story on our website. But yes,
and you believe everything he says.
I believe everything he says.
Okay.
I'm plugged into that. And I think that's really the consensus, is that this is kind of information seeking, and he would likely be back at Notre Dame. And you and I were talking off the air, you know, who was going to draft a 5'11 point guard, especially at this point.
It only takes one, but it seems unlikely.
Yeah, it seems unlikely somebody would say, yeah, this is a really good idea. He's a tremendous college player and can get better and has a lot that he can do at the college level.
17 points per game, 143 assists, 63 steals, an electric freshman campaign. So he'll be able to gather information, and hopefully it does help him improve his game, which only helps Micah Shrewsbury and the Fighting Irish. And he has until May 30th to take his name out of the draft, and then he can come back and play for the Fighting Irish. So keep May 30th in the back of your mind. We'll probably hear from Marcus at some point, and we'll start forward with the Fighting Irish basketball team this fall. We know that Kerry Booth's not going to be back. He's taking some official visits right now after he put his name in the transfer portal, and now Marcus Burton has put his name into the NBA draft, and it appears to be a search for information situation. So,
right.
Okay. The Notre Dame women's basketball team, Eric, which you cover,
yep,
they have lost a second player into the portal. It seems like they lose a couple every year. But this time it's center Nat Marshall, who, Eric, played a key role for the Fighting Irish down the stretch with all the injuries, played key minutes in the postseason,
yep,
averaged 5 points and 3.7 rebounds per game. In her statement on social media, she said it's time to move on from Notre Dame. Now, she has 1 year of eligibility remaining.
Right.
So what is your read on this from her standpoint and a Notre Dame standpoint?
From her standpoint, especially if she ends up in New York, it's going to be interesting. Like if she went to Fordham, for example, because she wants to get into modeling after basketball. She was involved in modeling at some point. I could see her. She'll have her Notre Dame degree. From a pure basketball standpoint, again, people want Neil to build up this roster with like 15 players on it. It's getting 12 is really difficult, yeah, in this day and age because kids want to play. But if you're Nat Marshall, and she knows Kate Koval very well, you have, I don't want to call her a generational center, but certainly the best center in this recruiting class and, according to recruiting analysts, the best center coming out of high school in the last few years coming in, which is a good chance that that player will start in Nat's position. If Kylie Watson's ACL surgery goes well, she'll be back and she will be ahead on the depth chart.
Okay.
I expect Maddie Westbeld to come back at forward. Notre Dame was already planning on bringing in another big body in the portal. They may need to bring in two at this point, maybe an older player that they know they can get through admissions, a grad transfer, and then a younger player, because you're going to have some turnover in the bigs the following year when Maddie Westbeld finally does say goodbye and Kylie Watson says goodbye as well. So, but I mean, she was kind of all over the place. Her career has been weird from the standpoint she's had a lot to overcome. She started her career in the midst of a 22-month layoff for ACL surgery.
Mm.
So she didn't have all of that at Notre Dame, but it wiped out her entire freshman year, wiped out part of her senior year in high school in Queens, and then into her sophomore year, she was a real kind of a bit player coming back slowly. And then junior year, played a little bit more, but still battled injuries. And then this year, she was healthy. Really was coming on in the non-conference portion of the season. In fact, they probably don't win the Tennessee game without her.
Hmm.
And then she gets to the ACC and hits a wall. And again, she hasn't played a lot. And then toward the end of the season, they needed her more, especially when Kylie Watson went down in the ACC tournament. So she made her first four career starts in the ACC championship game and three NCAA games. And I thought, played pretty well, but there's a lot of development to do there. I mean, Kate Koval at this point is more of a finished product than Nat Marshall as a incoming freshman. 6'5", built like a college player, built like a WNBA player. And is used to playing with a lot of good players around her. There were two starters with her on the McDonald's team from her high school team. Great. So she's used to sharing the ball. She's not going to come in and have this terrible adjustment to there being other good scorers on the team. She's going to be able to find her role. And Kylie Watson, I know a lot of people are down on her. You know, in the offseason, she has really flashed offensively. The one thing that Notre Dame was getting out of her down the stretch was really good defense. I think if Notre Dame had her in the Oregon State game, they win that game. There was enough between her and Nat Marshall to take care of Reagan Beers. Stop her, but certainly contain not get in foul trouble, contain her, not have to, you know, let her have her way when you get four fouls. So Kylie Watson will be an important part, but they need to look to the portal. I'm guessing, again, a grad transfer to kind of plug Nat's role, and then a younger big that they can bring along and say, hey, look, there's going to be a lot of playing time in the following season, so maybe somebody that just finished their freshman year.
Okay. So an opportunity for her to go play somewhere else, and for Notre Dame, the forward positions are going to be in good shape.
Right.
Okay. Read more about it at InsideIndySports.com. And Tyler has the write-up on Burton. You have the write-up on Marshall. And you can believe everything that both of you said, right? Not just Tyler, but you as well.
Oh, good. Thank you.
You never fib.
If I'm not a seven, you're actually an eight-time award winner.
I might have been the only person in the category every time. Who knows?
Well, at least they didn't vote for uncommitted.
That's true. They could have voted for other. That's right. Okay, before we get to our hat trick of opening topics, in fact, we might just break and then do those because we're running a little late. This was one of those cool moments as someone that has been a part of a sports team. When someone leaves your nest and goes to bigger and better things and has one of those special moments, you kind of feel it. And calling Notre Dame hockey the last 14 years, I've had the great pleasure of watching a lot of our guys go to the NHL and have success. And we can add to the list. Landon Slaggart, our captain this year, South Bend native, played in his 12th NHL game last night since leaving the Fighting Irish. And the Hawks were in St. Louis to take on the Blues. It was 5-1 St. Louis with under 4 minutes to go in the third. And Eric, this happened. And this is courtesy of NBC Sports Chicago. My good friend Chris Vosters on the call of Blackhawks hockey.
Some redwoods there as you
Yeah, absolutely.
Ryan Donato across to Landon Slaggart. He scores! They will take that one off the board. Landon Slaggart's first goal in the NHL.
Yeah, what a beautiful pass, too.
And since you can't see it, they're doing a TV broadcast. They don't have to explain everything that's going on. He was in the defensive zone. He was behind the play and just raced through center, got by the Blues defenseman, got the puck right wing, got to the right circle, got to the front of the net, and wristed it by the goaltender for his first NHL goal. And now in 12 games, he's got a goal and two assists. He's off to a really, really good start, killing penalties for the Blackhawks. He's on a fourth line with not much talent around him, so points are tough to come by. But by golly, number 84 with the Hawks, Landon Slaggart, picked up his first NHL goal last night. And remembering him on open skates after Notre Dame hockey game, just kind of skating around, flying by all the other folks that were skating on the ice, it's kind of one of those, wow, he was like this tall when I remember him, and now scoring in the NHL. Landon, congratulations. Job well done.
That was better than a golf clap.
That was like, yeah, let's go.
Yeah, that was like, I'm going to throw an octopus onto the ice.
That's clap. What the Red Wings do.
Yes.
That's the Red Wings thing. This is the Blackhawks. So
okay, throw your gloves and sticks.
Might have been a little too much for the moment. He was very nonchalant about it. Didn't smile. Just, you know, they all do the little head taps and stuff.
Okay.
But that was awesome last night. All right, we'll take a timeout. You'll hear from Notre Dame quarterback coach Gino Gadulli in a moment on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Abby, thank you. 525 on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT. I'm Darren Pritchett, joined by Eric Hansen, the publisher and editor at InsideIndySports.com. While you're listening to the program, go ahead and check out InsideIndySports.com for the latest in Notre Dame athletics, including a couple of the storylines we talked about to kick off the program. Marcus Burton has put his name in the NBA draft, and Nat Marshall has entered her name into the transfer portal. 5:26 is our time. We're 9 days away from the Notre Dame football blue gold game, which you can hear live on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Eric and I will have the call of the annual wrap-up of spring practice live from Notre Dame Stadium here on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. And no surprise, fans in attendance, fans listening to us on the radio or on the stream, they'll be wondering how the quarterbacks are faring and how they're doing. And we're going to be, of course, focused as anyone on what the quarterbacks are going to do. Steve Angeli, Kenny Minchie, C.J. Carr, Riley Leonard out with the ankle surgery, not expecting him to be a part of the blue goal game. So those three quarterbacks, that's probably worth tuning in more than anything else. Gino Gadulli's been in charge of the quarterback room for the last 2 years, working with these guys. It's a fun job for him right now with all the talent in that quarterback room. And Gino Gadulli met the media and was asked about working with Riley Leonard this spring and what Riley's getting out of spring practice.
It was great to just see him out there today in some 7-on-7. And he's progressed a lot faster than we thought, just coming in and getting his ankle cleaned up. And he's done a great job of just anything he can do, he's going to get in there. So the walkthroughs, the blitz pickups, and all the things that he's kind of, his limitations allow him to do, he's going to get in there and do. And he got in to finally do some 7-on-7 action. So we'll continue to build on his progress from today. But I just want to see him lead. I want to see him try to learn the offense the best as he can without out there repping it, which I think he's done a great job of. And just continue to get healthy.
Hey, nothing's ever going to replace the opportunity to be in spring practice, being in the huddle, being at the line of scrimmage, going through the process of every play. But the mental reps that he's taking right now are very, very important. And I'll say this. You kind of tweaked my thinking on Riley Leonard yesterday, Eric, by the comments you made. Yeah.
Okay.
Because, as I said, nothing replaces being on the field.
Yep.
That's the most valuable thing that you can have as a player, to go through the spring. That's why we have practice in the spring, to get better. And he can't get better on the field right now, but mentally, hopefully, he is doing things right now and learning things that will help him come the fall. But you made a great point on yesterday's program that there are so many key skill position players that are not participating right now. It's not like he could be building chemistry with all these guys at the current time, like a Mitchell Evans is a prime example, or a Kevin Bauman, or a Bo Collins, who is coming from Clemson, but right now is not a part of spring practice. So
it's up watching.
Yeah, and you got the offensive line that I'm sure they're doing different combinations every day. So there are a lot of things he could gain, but it's not like he's gaining 100% if he was on the field right now, because there's just so many things that are missing right now from the Fighting Irish offense.
Right. And so it makes the summer huge for him. And again, the timeline looks like he's going to be clear for that. And he is getting on the field, I think, more than people realize in some drills. Now, he's not doing team periods, meaning when they're having competitive things, but he's doing some individual drills where he's getting on the field and doing some things. So
next up, here's Gino Gadulli offering some thoughts on Steve Angeli, the guy who had a terrific Sun Bowl, could have been the MVP of the Sun Bowl, but it went to Jordan Faison. Here is Gino Gadulli on Steve Angeli.
You know, I think all the time in our quarterback room, I always tell those guys, like, at the end of the day, it's you versus you. It's not Steve and Riley or Kenny and CJ. At the end of the day, it's Steve and Steve. And, like, Steve had a tremendous opportunity last year to learn underneath Sam and kind of watch Sam's routine and how he prepared himself each day for practice, how he prepared himself each week for games. And you see Steve kind of emulating that same routine that Sam had last year. And I think it's really paid off for him. I think he's doing a great job leading the offense. And, you know, with a new offense, I think the room as a whole has kind of grasped the offense pretty well as far as connecting the dots from some things we did last year to some similar things that we're doing this year. And then taking the new stuff and just kind of ran with it. So, again, happy with his progression. You know, Steve, last year this time, you'd be like, I don't know. But, like, from last year spring through the season, obviously to the bowl game, which he started, to now, like, the progression's been tremendous. And he and I both are hoping that that progression continues through the summer and through the fall this year.
It's easy to say Steve Angeli's a really good security blanket. And I don't want that to be a negative, but backup quarterbacks are individuals that you want to be able to come in and not have to drastically change your offense. They can come in, pick up where the quarterback ahead of him left off, and run the offense well. And Steve can do that. But saying that, I don't want to diminish the fact that he is still in a competition to be the starter for this football team. So he is a really good security blanket. He is a great number two quarterback to have, but I'm sure he has bigger ambitions to be the starter of this football team, despite the fact that Riley Leonard got him, it sounds like, a very nice NIL deal to come to South Bend.
Steve Angeli believes he is a starting quarterback at this point. The Sun Bowl was huge for him. He talked about that in terms of his confidence. It was also huge for the team to see him do that, because then there was a higher bar for Riley Leonard to clear in terms of differentiating who's number one and who's number two eventually. But the weird part of this quarterback thing is there is as good a three and as good a four as you're going to find in college football on most campuses right now. And those guys are coming behind him. So, you know, I think that's where Steve, I think, is handling things so well and making the best out of this opportunity, because he is growing. He's not worried about the guys behind him. He's not worried about when Riley Leonard's healthy. He's playing his best football this spring, which helps him whether he's here or somewhere other than Notre Dame.
All right. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. Notre Dame quarterback coach Gino Guiduli was asked about the number three quarterback, Kenny Minchie.
The natural progression. You know, last spring, you know, he was very similar to CJ, just coming in, trying to learn the offense. Trying to get accustomed to the speed of the game. You can see the game starting to slow down for him. You can see, like, pre-snap, he's able to kind of recognize what's about to happen to him defensively and play with a little better anticipation. He's playing with more sense of urgency. So I'm happy with right now with where Kenny's at, how he's playing, how he's progressed.
He's in an interesting spot, as we talked about last night. You got Leonard and Angeli battling for the starting job, and Minchie is a guy that wants to be a part of this battle. And while he's looking ahead at Leonard and Angeli, he's got to look in his rearview mirror, Eric, because it sure sounds like CJ Carr is coming very, very quickly, almost ahead of schedule, which is saying a lot knowing the high expectations for him coming out of high school.
Yeah, it's really, again, seeing some of these springs where, I mean, like Brian Kelly, his first year here, Dane Crist, had he not been way, way ahead of schedule with a serious leg injury, and he begged Tommy Reese not to play on his basketball team, please come early. And then Nate Montana was the other guy, and he could flat out not play on the college level. It was and Brian was panicked. I mean, he had two other quarterbacks coming in, Andrew Hendricks and the other kid from Cincinnati, whose name escapes me.
Went to Connecticut?
No. He was Luke Massa.
Luke Massa, there you go.
And they could not be an early enrollees. Their high schools wouldn't let them. So he had them come 2 weeks early. That was how concerned he was about the quarterback depth. I mean, if you had C.J. Carr that spring, guess who had been starting in the fall? And that's not a knock on Dane Crist. I mean, that's a knock on Dane Crist's knees that failed him. A patella problem and an ACL.
535, he's Eric Hansen, the publisher and editor at InsideIndySports.com. I'm Darren Pritchett. another opening topic for tonight. And you're going to have the chance to talk to Marcus Freeman on Saturday as he meets the media following a full practice open to the media. So, Eric, without giving away too much of your arsenal, you may have to keep a couple of the really good ones in your back pocket that you want to ask. But I'm just wondering, generally speaking, what are the three most important questions that Marcus Freeman needs to be asked on Saturday?
Well, I think a lot of it's going to be predicated upon what we see in practice. But let's say there are no surprises. There's nothing that we didn't expect. First of all, we're going to ask about injury updates and timelines. I mean, we haven't talked to him about Ben Morrison's recovery time yet. We haven't had That's him right. since that. So it's been a long time. We've had a lot of the other assistants, a lot of players, but we haven't had Ben Morrison. And the one thing Marcus does, he lets his assistants say anything except for injuries. He would rather be the voice about injury timelines and so forth, so he discourages them. So kind of with that in mind, the first one I would think about is how confident is he that Eli Raerden is all the way back? We just finally saw him participating fully in drills. So the reason that you ask that question is because Mitchell Evans has a blurred timeline. Kevin Bauman has a blurred life. I mean, we don't know if he's coming back, period. And then we know that Jack Larson looks like a freshman, really sure. talented, but he looks like a freshman.
Yep.
So you have Cooper Flanagan, you have Davis Sherwood. Now, if Holden stays at stuck around, this would be pretty easy, but you have to kind of, you're going to have to make a decision about the transfer portal bringing somebody in if you're not confident Evans and Eli are going to be 100% healthy. And I think Eli probably will be. I mean, again, this is why you asked the question, because there's been this kind of half go thing, and we haven't had a chance to ask Marcus about it. Number two, I would say the offensive line progression, kind of the offensive line game plan. What's he seeing? Are they still competing for spots? Are they working on chemistry? What's the plan there? And I think that's going to be important. And what's the timeline with all that, with those decisions? How important is it that they know who the five starters are going into the summer, as opposed to last year when they had two guys win jobs in August? And then the last one for me is kind of a nitpicky one. It's, you know, how do you feel about the pass rush? Where is it going to come from? One of the things that Notre Dame was able to so improve on in their defense last year was turnovers caused and red zone defense. I mean, right. they went from oh. near the bottom of both to near the top of both categories in the country. And a lot of that was predicated on the pressure they were able to bring. So I'm curious about how the pressure is going to come. I know they have linebackers that can bring it. And I feel like they have edge players. Certainly the interior guys can.
Love them.
I think they have the edge players. Which edge players? Who's kind of standing out? So it's not so much of a do you have pressure or not. It's kind of where is it coming from? How's that developing?
Okay. Finally, our final opening topic for tonight, Eric. To go to basketball just for a second, if you've listened to Sports Beat, you know that Eric got his start in college athletics covering Bob Knight and the yeah. Indiana Hoosier basketball program at a time in which Indiana basketball was at one of its top levels in its history. And you've got those national championship banners hanging from the Assembly Hall. The last one came in 1987 when Keith Smart hit that dramatic shot from the deep corner down at the Superdome in New Orleans against the Syracuse Orange. Since then, a lot has happened. Bob Knight was fired. They've gone through various coaches. Kelvin Sampson got caught cheating and got kicked out of college basketball for some time. And after going to the NBA as an assistant, now back head coach of the Houston Cougars. And there's not been a consistent amount of success for Indiana. I bring this up because UConn, within the last couple of years, have entered that small group of teams we can call blue bloods. I think we can say Kentucky is a blue blood. You can talk about Kansas. You can talk about Duke and North Carolina. UCLA is an interesting one For about 15 years, Eric, they were the most dominant program in any sport, but it hasn't continued through the years. Let's leave that aside. So we've added UConn to the Blue Blood list. My question is, can you be kicked out of the Blue Blood list? And I bring that up because Indiana has not been Indiana in quite some time, Eric. So I'm wondering, is Indiana still a Blue Blood basketball program? Because since 1987, their success level has really been a roller coaster ride.
I define probably Blue Blood a little bit different than you do. So I think we're probably more on the same page. I think, is Indiana an elite program right now? No.
No.
Are they a Blue Blood to me? Yes. And here's how I define Blue Blood. A program that has the kind of tradition, the kind of history, the resources, and the commitment to be an elite program. And sometimes those go dormant. I mean, you think about Alabama between Bear Bryant and Nick Saban. There were some lean years there. Alabama wasn't a Blue Blood by maybe a more modern definition. By my definition, they were. I remember talking to Fred Akers about this. Fred was the head coach at Texas after Darryl Royal. And then Texas went through some lean years. And Fred got fired when he was having pretty good success, came up to Purdue, and that's how I got to know him pretty well. And we became friends after he left Purdue and stayed friends for years. And he said, what a Blue Blood is to me, Eric, is there's a pilot light. And if you can relight it, that program can come back. If you have the right coach, if you have the right administration, you can get it back. And we see that with like Texas football right now. Texas football is back up right now. And I think Indiana has a recruiting area. They have a recruiting base. They have the tradition. They have the commitment. I don't know that they have the coach. I don't know that they have the administration to do it right now. But if you can get all those things to align, then they can come back. I think you can lose Blue Blood status when you've been away from it for so long. And I'll give you an example. One I think is Nebraska football.
I don't think Nebraska football
is ever coming back to a consistent level. I think Matt Rhule has made it interesting, but as soon as Matt Rhule snags some success there, somebody else is going to pluck him, and he's going to go to, guess what, a Blue Blood program and try to revive that. He's at a program I don't think will ever be. And there were a lot of people, like during the Jerry Faust era and maybe some other eras, Joe Koharik, where people felt like Notre Dame was never going to be a Blue Blood again, that they had kind of lost that touch, and yet era relit the pilot light.
See, the
Lou Holtz
is
relit the pilot light, and really to a certain extent Brian Kelly and Marcus Freeman have gotten things going where Notre Dame is certainly relevant in that conversation.
And that's the difference. Notre Dame has been knocking on the door. Indiana is not knocking on the door. It's been 20 years since they've been a Final Four.
But Bob Davie, Charlie Weiss, Tyrone Willingham, it was kind of icky on most of those years. Charlie had a couple of good years, and Tyrone had a good start one year. But it was, let me tell you, I mean, I remember my emails and my written mails back before there were emails. And again, you're going to see programs drop off that level. But there's some programs that will, I mean, that can't sustain along. Like, for example, if Duke has a few good years, Duke is never going to be a Blue Blood in football.
Right.
In basketball, yes. In football, no. I don't know that Notre Dame basketball could ever be a Blue Blood.
No. Let me ask you, is UCLA basketball still a Blue Blood?
Yes. I think because you have the recruiting base, you have the talent. The transfer portal, though, and the NIL changes so much. I mean, maybe that formula is different. And I will say this. I do think Notre Dame women's basketball is a Blue Blood and will continue to be. But men's basketball, I think that's tough. I think it's tough.
Okay. That's.
I think Mike is doing a great job, and he can have some success, but I think
sustain is going to be tough.
Yeah, sustain is going to be tough.
And sustain meaning Final Four contender, national championship contender.
And when was Notre Dame's last Final Four in men's basketball?
1978?
I believe so, which is the year I graduated from high school, which was when they invented electricity.
Miracle on Ice had not happened yet.
Yeah.
Think about that. It's been a while. Eric Hansen, publisher, editor, InsideIndySports.com. I think that's the comparison. Indiana basketball right now is Nebraska football. There's a lot of parallels there. Although I think Indiana has a better chance to, I'll use your phrase, reignite the pilot more so than Nebraska.
It isn't helping that Purdue has gotten so good. Now, again, when I covered those programs, they were both good almost every year. But right now, Purdue is getting the kids Indiana used to get.
Did you see Gene Katy had the P?
I did.
Put that in the back of his haircut? Amazing.
Why wouldn't you want to have a P on the back of your head?
I wish he could have watched them win the title. That would have been so cool. I remember when Villanova won, Raleigh Massimino was with Mike Fratello in the stands when Chris Jenkins hit that dramatic shot against North Carolina. And to see Raleigh, the head coach of the 86 team that won the title, was just kind of heartwarming. But Gino would have had a big smile on his face had the Boilermakers got it done. We'll take a timeout. We'll answer some of Eric's chat questions from InsideIndySports.com. More Irish football talk next on WSBT. And we're back on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on your home of the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame and the Blue Goal Game. Saturday, April 20th at 1 o'clock. Eric and I will have the call on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Eric Hansen is the publisher and editor at InsideIndySports.com. My name is Darren Pritchett. 5:52 is our time, so let's go through some of the questions that Eric was asked in his Notre Dame football chat, which occurred yesterday at noon. And you can always be a part of the conversation Wednesday at noon. All you have to do is go to InsideIndySports.com, click on the link, it'll take you to the chat, and you can ask any question that you want. Now, there are rules. The no spitting rule remained in effect this week. Sometimes you can wear no shoes, but you know what? On the weeks the Irish lose, you don't really have any restrictions. You just let things happen as they do, because Irish fans are frustrated. All right, let's get to some of the questions. Eric, the first one comes from Rick. He wants to know, how much of an impact do you think Riley Leonard missing spring ball will impact his connection with the wide receivers?
Well, I think that is a legitimate concern, and we've talked about it a little bit on the show. The summer becomes everything. Now, if his timeline, what he thinks his recovery timeline is, that he's going to be good to go at some point in May, and really if he's good to go in early June, this is going to work out well. There's a lot of players-only practices. There's times where he can throw with guys, and that's where he's going to be able to get his chemistry, and he's going to be able to play catch-up.
Tim from Vancouver, Washington, do you believe Jordan Faison and the linebacker KVA will make the two deep rotations this season?
I do. Jordan Faison is missing a lot of the work in practice. He comes, but he doesn't, if it's not early in the week, he doesn't participate in practice. He just watches. And so he is one of the stars on the number one ranked men's lacrosse team, and they are going through a meat grinder of a schedule. They've beaten, I think, three top five teams this year. They still have Virginia, who's number two left, and then they play some of those teams again in the ACC tournament and the NCAA tournament.
That Duke game Sunday was wild.
Yeah.
There was chaos in that game, some cheap shots and everything else.
So I do think that he and Jaden Greathouse will be a really good 1-2 punch as slot receivers. I think it'll be a timeshare. With the linebackers, Drake Bowen is doing a really good job, and I think he'll be the starting linebacker, middle linebacker. But Kingston Viliamu-Asa, the five-star freshman, has been outstanding. I mean, if you know nothing about Notre Dame's team and you just kind of wandered out to practice, say, who's 27? And he is physically very gifted, and then he's also putting in the work to be up to speed on everything with the defense. So I think minimally you're going to see five linebackers play a lot, the three starters, Bowen, Kaiser, and Snead, and then I think you'll see Jaden Osbury and KVA play a lot. And you may even get a sixth in Preston Zinner.
Hmm. Another question from Eric's chat at InsideIndySports.com. Tom from Kennesaw, Georgia. Saturday scrimmage is a big day for everyone because it will be our first look at the 2024 team in game-like situations. Tom says he remembers that second and third team players often used a great scrimmage to catapult them into a position to contribute in games. He wants you to shine your crystal ball and give us two players on offense and two on defense that might make such a leap.
Well, I think the difficult part of answering Tom's question, as I told him, is that a lot of those players have already kind of made the leap in spring practice. For example, Adon Schuler is moved up. I mean, he's a guy that otherwise I could say, guess what, Adon Schuler, wait until after Saturday. So two guys that their status is maybe not as pronounced, I would say Micah Gilbert, who was running with the ones the other day, and Jaden Thomas, keep in mind, has been limited through most of spring, but he's ahead of Deion Colsey. And then Cooper Flanagan at tight end. Cooper has had a really good spring with the other tight ends down. He may be hard to move out of there. And then on defense, this is my new football crush, Jaden Osbury, and then my old football crush from earlier in the spring, Boubacar Traore.
Okay, keep those names in mind. So this question might be too similar, but Andre from Miami, in the entirely too early to ask question of the day, who do you tab as a surprise breakout player or players on either side of the ball?
Yeah, it's never too early to ask any question. Sometimes I mean, they're asking you to be a psychic rather than projecting based on something you've seen. But what's difficult about this question is, again, we've discussed a lot of these breakout players. So maybe two players that we haven't discussed. And so I'm gonna have to lean back into the Micah Gilbert.
Yeah,
I think he's going to find a way to get on the field. He's just, you talk to players and they're like, man, Micah Gilbert. And he was in an all-star game in the Dallas area. It wasn't the Under Armour game and it wasn't the U.S. Army game. It's a new one that Tom Lemming is now affiliated with. And it had a crazy score of like 58-42 or something like that. But Micah Gilbert was tearing it up. And then the other guy, I'd say, is Rod Hurd, too, and we talked about this on the show the other day. If he's better than Adon Schuler and better than what Luke Talich is eventually going to be, this guy is going to be a star. I mean, he's going to be able to flat-out play. So I'm going to go with Rod Hurd, too, because he is under the radar because he is not in spring practice right now.
Another question from Eric's chat at InsideIndySports.com. Ryan from Mars, Pennsylvania. Who will be the leading tackler since J.D. Bertrand is going to the NFL?
You know, the middle linebacker does have a pretty good advantage in that. J.D. Bertrand was one of the few players in Notre Dame history to lead the team in tackles for 3 years in a row. There's only a handful of them. I'm going to go with Jack Kaiser. Jack, for a guy that had about half the snaps of Maris Leafau in the last couple years, had either more tackles or right about the same amount of tackles at a position where it was harder to get them. With him being in the inside, I think Jack Kaiser is going to be the leading tackler on this team, and he will have less of a rotation at his position.
True. Okay, finally, Stan from Siberia, Indiana.
I think he was trying to be funny there, but I let it slide.
I was going to say, where in the world is
Well,
that?
I mean, there is a Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. We get a question from Kevin, and Kevin really is from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. But
if they're
Siberia, Indiana, I think is South Bend. I mean, when in the winter, anyways.
If there is such a place, many people down in Bloomington will be sending Mike Woodson to that particular place. Okay, Stan wants to know, do you – this is a really interesting question. I like this question. Do you?
That's why I took it.
Of course. Do you think transfer portal additions will decline when the roster is all Coach Freeman recruits? And he adds in, is Kenny mentioned a Freeman recruit or maybe the dividing line?
Let's start with the Kenny Minchie question. He was way into Marcus Freeman's time. Brian Kelly left in November of 2021. Notre Dame didn't get seriously involved with Kenny Minchie until the fall of 2022 when they had the Dante Moore kind of fell through and they were scrambling to get another quarterback in that class. Kenny was actually committed to Pitt, and so that gives Pat Narduzzi another reason, the Pitt head coach, to not like Notre Dame. In terms of are they going to have less? No, I think this is the way of the world. I don't think Notre Dame will ever be transfer portal reliant like some teams like Colorado, but I think they're going to fill holes with it. And why wouldn't you? And you're going to have unexpected departures. You're going to have positions where guys go pro or they get injured and you're going to be very young or very thin at a position. With the transfer portal, you can fix that. You don't have to, kind of like Brian Kelly did in 2012, move a bunch of offensive guys to your defensive backfield and cross your fingers. You know, Kavari Russell was a running back slash wide receiver who learned to play cornerback 3 weeks before the 2012 season started, and he flipped Bennett Jackson over to that side, flipped Matthias Farley from offense to defense. So, I mean, I think those days are limited. You know, I don't know that we're going to see a lot of Xavier Watts transformations.
Okay, very good. And you can check out every single question and every answer. The transcript is available at InsideNDSports.com, and you can be a part of the fun next Wednesday at noon. All you have to do is go to InsideNDSports.com. All right. Eric, what is happening over the next couple of days at InsideNDSports.com?
Well, right now we have a couple of football features up, one on Mitchell Evans and how his rehab is progressing and what he's doing to contribute to the team. My new football crush, Jaden Osbury, it has a lot of insight into the depth of the linebackers and how that's going to work. We have transfer portal, Nat Marshall. We have NBA early entry, Marcus Burton. Tyler James submitted a future cast, which means he thinks somebody's going to commit to Notre Dame. We have the chat transcript. We'll have a podcast tomorrow with Michael McCann. He is a law professor up at University of New Hampshire, but he does all kinds of sports law stuff for Sportico. He used to work for Sports Illustrated.
Okay.
And so we're going to be talking about the labor union stuff. If you want to get the down in the details about NIL and employee status and all this stuff, we're all just going, there's nobody that's smarter about it than Michael McCann. So we're going to ask the questions and then we're going to get out of his way.
Okay. Very good. All in one place. InsideNDSports.com.
And much, much more.
And much, much more. Today is Frozen Four National Semifinal today. Game number one, BU leads Denver 1-0 in the second period. Michigan and Boston College are playing in game two. I just bring this up. We talked about Blue Bloods earlier in the program. Eric, this might be the greatest Blue Blood Final Four you can have in any sport. These are Denver's won 9, Michigan has won 9, BC and BU have won probably 10, 12, 13 between them. This is like having Duke, North Carolina, UCLA in a Final Four in basketball. So pretty doggone impressive.
And Indiana. Just kidding.
Nah. UConn now. Yeah. Maybe I should add UConn. I mean, 6 and 25 years in this era, Eric, is off the chart. Off the chart good. I'll talk to you next week. Have a great weekend.
Sounds great.
That's Eric Hansen. Check him out. The Hall of Fame writer at InsideNDSports.com. We're going to talk golf, Blackthorn Golf Club, the Masters with the owner of Blackthorn, Tim Firestone, in 5 minutes on Sports Radio 960 WSB. It is 6:11 on your home of the Fighting Irish and the Blue Goal game on April the 20th. Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Darren Pritchett with you on this Thursday, April the 11th, 2024. It is day one of the Masters down at Augusta National. And after some tough weather start of the day, a delayed beginning to the first round, the sun is out, the wind is up, and the scores are pretty good. Soft conditions with the best players in the world on this property lead to some pretty low numbers. And Bryson DeChambeau leads the way at minus 7, a 65 today. Scottie Scheffler playing 18. He is at 6 under par. I welcome back to the program the owner of Blackthorn Golf Club, Tim Firestone, who I know is always eager to watch the Masters, and he joins me here on WSBT Radio. Tim, first off, it's good to talk to you, and I guess it's fairly important to say happy golf season to everybody in Northern Indiana.
That's right. It's been too long, man. I've missed you. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Absolutely. Give me the status of Blackthorn Golf Club, when it opened, and how are things going at Blackthorn so far?
Well, we got off to the earliest start in the 30-year history of Blackthorn. We got open March 1st, and it's been crazy ever since. So a couple bad weeks here recently, but really off and running for a great season. And the golf course is in unbelievable condition. The greens are better than I've ever seen them. And,
wow.
Yeah, this global warming thing is helping the college fund at the Firestone household. So,
well, we've talked about this for several years now, but there's been such a huge surge in people wanting to get out and playing golf. I wish it wasn't because of COVID, but that kind of ignited everything, Tim, and it just really hasn't slowed down.
Not at all. It's been amazing to see what has happened in the game of golf, and you know, it just every year continues to grow. We see it from our junior camps and the enrollment and the numbers. You see it on the driving range with families out there and, you know, younger kids. And you see it with, you know, the tee sheet in the afternoons with high school kids and college kids playing. And it's just golf's become cool again. You know, it's not the dorky sport anymore. So a lot of great things happening in our sport.
Why don't you, Tim, for a second, just discuss the youth program that you have out at Blackthorn? I know kids are still in school right now, but when we get to summertime, kids are looking for things to do, and no better way to get them started in the game of golf.
Yeah, we have our Blackthorn Junior camps, three sessions in the summer, and we've really created a neat kind of curriculum and program. It's mixes a lot of fun activities, as well as golf instruction and games and prizes and ice cream and all the fun things to really try to get kids introduced to the game and get them to fall in love with the game. And we've seen nothing but growth from the enrollment standpoint. And we're probably half full in all 3 weeks so far. We do have some spots available. So it's not too early to start thinking about that, but would encourage everybody that has young kids, 7 to 13 is our sweet spot there with the junior camps, and blackthorngolf.com has all the information about the dates and times and costs and all that fun stuff.
I think it's been well over a year now since you opened up a brand new tee on number one. I'm curious how players at Blackthorn have responded to that change. I just think number one plays so much better from where you have the tee right now. Just from looking at the hole, it's just a really, really good look.
Yeah, people love it. You know, I think, you know, the golf course, we're celebrating our 30th anniversary this year, which is hard to believe. But, you know, after looking at the same golf course and any kind of changes to tees or holes, I think people get a kick out of to kind of have a different look. And I think that was a really good one as far as making that hole much more challenging and fun to play.
Tim Firestone, owner of Blackthorn Golf Club, is my guest. I think it's fair to say, and if I'm wrong, I'm still going to say this, But I really feel like you changed local golf from one standpoint. When you brought the Blackthorn card out, a lot of people have copied it ever since, but this is the original, and it is really something that has been very popular through the years, and I would assume available once again this year.
Yeah, thanks for the comment, Darren. Yeah, when we launched that, I think it was 2012 or 13, it was, you know, more of a, I wouldn't call it desperation, but definitely we had to do something to increase our numbers and our rounds. And, it, you know, we were very fortunate that it took off, and it's been nothing but growing every single year. And, you know, again, it's, we've come up with different levels of it. We've got our regular Blackthorn card. We've got now the Plus card, and we've got our silver and our gold membership. So we've kind of got a program for any golfer that is, you know, whether you play 10 rounds a year or you play 100 rounds a year, we've got a nice fit for everybody.
One thing I've always appreciated about Blackthorn, despite the fact it's a great layout, always in great shape, I think you've got a really good mixture of tees at Blackthorn, whether you've got a senior, a female, a youngster, someone that hits it 4 miles. There's a tee for everyone, and I don't think every golf course has that.
No, and you bring up a great point. And I think it's also helped in this growth that we've seen in the game is that the stigma of moving forward and playing the tees that are suitable for your game has changed and made the game a lot more enjoyable. I mean, we have older gentlemen who play every week, a couple times a week, who have moved and all the way forward and play. And it's just, now they're not hitting driver 3-wood wedge on par fours. They can actually reach the par fours and two, and it, you know, they can enjoy the game again. So that stigma has kind of gone away, and people are falling in love with the game again, I think, because of that.
Don't be ashamed to play the up tees.
No, you still got to get the ball in the hole. You know what I mean? I mean, it's still the game of golf. And when you're only hitting a driver 180 or 200 yards and you're trying to play the everyday tees that we have, it's going to be a grind on you. You know, I mean, you're not going to get to those par fours. So I'm ready to move forward, Darren. That's, you know, I'm over 50 now. So I think I need to move forward.
You hit it a country mile still, I'm sure. I haven't seen you hit in a couple of years, but I have a feeling you still move it okay.
I don't know. Some days. Some days. Just can't put it all together like I used to. But, yeah, it's been, I think, even personally for me, just falling in love with the game again. I hadn't played for a lot of years with so much going on.
Yeah.
Last year I played a lot and off to start playing a lot this year. And once we get you playing more regularly, you know, everything will be perfect.
There you go. What about instruction at Blackthorn?
Yeah, so we have the Blackthorn Golf Academy. We've spent a lot of time and resources trying to build, you know, the best instructional options you have in the area. And we've got two instructors, Matt Harrell and Randy Anderson, who kind of lead our Blackthorn Golf Academy. We've got launch monitor and simulator and the whole kit and caboodle. We've got TaylorMade Titleist, Srixon fitting carts, custom fitting. We're the number one Srixon dealer in the state of Indiana.
Really?
It's kind of one of those brands that's under the radar, but you give the customer, you know, two or three, you know, irons or drivers to hit, and Srixon this spring with their new product has been winning out almost every time. I think we've sold about 24 sets of clubs already.
Wow.
Srixon's, which, again, yeah, that's a brand you don't really think of unless you're Hideki.
that's right.
I think maybe Brooks, but there's not a lot of guys playing it.
Which brings me to this, Tim. There's been an interesting discussion this week on the Golf Channel. They're live from the Masters show, and we are seeing that we're going to have some changes in the golf ball coming that's mainly going to affect the professional tours. In fact, it might take away 10 to 15 yards off their tee shots. I heard them say it might affect the recreational golfer 5 yards, so it will not be as dramatic. So I'm honestly in favor of making adjustments to the golf ball because some elite courses are becoming obsolete, and they talked at the Masters this week. They don't want to have a course that's 8,000 yards, and honestly, that's not too far away. But my problem is, Tim, if they do this, and again, I'm in favor of it. If it brings shot-making and more excitement to the game, I'm all for it. But don't you think with technology and other areas, it won't take long for the pros to find that yardage right back?
Yeah, I do. I think that where there's a will, there's a way, and it's going to be through the shaft or club head or material that they're using in the club head. There's going to be something that will help them gain that back. Whether they gain it all the way back, I don't know, and how much will they reduce, you know, the flight of the ball. But, you know, I'm personally not a fan of it at all for the amateur level.
Right.
I think that's ridiculous. But, no, I agree. I mean, they're so far. The kid, tall, I can't remember his name playing, but hitting it, you know, 400 yards on five in practice rounds, you know, I mean, that's just insane. And it's only getting longer and longer. The way we're teaching the game of golf and technology and the physical fitness, you couple all that together with these young guys and they're just bombing it, and it's crazy. So something had to be done on the professional level for sure.
Well, rough is not going to slow these guys down. The only thing I can think of is more trees and more water hazards. That's the only way you can slow them down other than making adjustments to equipment.
Yep.
That's it.
I think so. And yep.
Crazy. Hey, Tim, what about 13 LIV golfers getting into the Masters? If things don't change, eventually some of these guys are going to run out of exemptions and start falling out of the majors. Are you confident at all that eventually we're going to bring everybody back together? Because it sure seems like from a TV rating standpoint, this split has really, really hurt the PGA Tour. Ratings are way down.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt that something has to be done. I think even Rory this week, you know, acknowledges it, where LIV has done the damage of taking away some of these players. But what I haven't seen happen is the popularity of LIV. You know, for an example, as an advertiser, I would never buy a spot. I just don't see the viewership. I don't know the traction that they're gaining. And it's a different, unique market that they're hitting, definitely a younger demographic that they're looking for. I don't watch LIV golf events. I think it's, you know, it's like they're on vacation in their shorts playing three rounds of golf. It's just kind of goofy golf, you know. I don't get it. You know, Taylor Gooch wins every other week. You know, who's Taylor Gooch? You know, so it's, something has to be done. I don't know what the answer is going to be, but the game is so popular right now. There's so much money in the game. There's so many good players. This is a shame that this is happening, in my opinion, and I think they have to find a way to get these guys back together again somehow, some way.
Tim, I saw a video of Jon Rahm hitting into a green on a LIV Golf Tour event, and there was not one single person around the green. I know he got $600-800 million, and I'm not going to get into how do you turn that down? You're set for life, blah, blah, blah. It's true. But at the same time, he grew up wanting to be a champion, wanting to play the best, wanting to play in front of big crowds. And that was just a bizarre scene, arguably the number one player in the world who was playing in front of no one. And I got the sense at the Masters this week by some of his comments, he didn't say it, but I think he's having some regrets with his decision.
Yeah, he said he wants to go to four rounds. I saw that for sure. But when you're a competitor and you're grinding out at the Masters this week against the best players in the world, and then next week you're playing again in a three-day event in, you know, Charlotte, North Carolina with 4,000 fans, I think that, you know, that these guys, they're too competitive. I think they want more. You know, they want to grind it out and beat the best. And some of those guys, I think we've talked about this before. If you look at Phil and you look at some of the guys that aren't competitive anymore, that took the money, you know, the Ian Poulters and the guys, that makes all the sense, right? They're not going to compete at the highest level. Yeah, take the money. Okay, great. But now when you're talking about taking, you know, Cam and you're talking about John Rahm and these guys and Brooks that are competitive and they want to play at the highest level. It's, I think they're going to get bored with it. That's what I think. Yeah. You know, it's just not fun.
I'll tell you what, there's a lot of guys that went to LIV, but honestly, as a PGA Tour fan, Brooks Koepka, John Rahm, Tyrrell Hatton, Cam Smith, give me those four back and keep the rest. I really don't need the rest. Maybe Patrick Reed to be the villain. You always kind of need that Darth Vader guy, but honestly, you don't really need him. You don't need Bubba Watson.
No.
You don't need Poulter. You give me those four
agree.
Guys and you can keep the rest. And the PGA Tour is going to be in great shape.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
Hmm. So what do you think about the Masters so far today? Anything stand out to you?
No, I think we're seeing the cream rising to the crop. I mean, Scotty Scheffler's the best player in the world, and I don't see it coming to an end anytime soon, that's
amazing.
For sure. So I Tiger so far watching looks decent. It's good to see him playing. It's, I mean, even if he's not competitive, just to see him out playing is a miracle in itself. So all good stuff at Augusta. Yeah, they're exciting golf so far.
Well, I'm just not hoping DeChambeau wins. That's another LIV guy you can keep. He had a 7-under 65 today. But I'm just kind of tired of all his stick and the power and all the analytics. It just kind of got old, to be perfectly honest.
But don't you feel, though, Darren, like we don't even hear from those guys anymore?
No.
You know, it's like they've become irrelevant. So it's like you don't even think about Bryson anymore.
No.
You know?
Mm-mm.
So
I don't understand, and I've tried to re-up on it. I don't understand the PGA Tour and LIV had that agreement last year. I don't understand how that's affecting anything. I thought it was going to produce changes. Maybe LIV goes away. Heck, nothing has changed. John Rahm switched tours since that agreement. So I'm really confused what that agreement means going forward. It sure doesn't seem like a whole lot from my standpoint, just as a golf fan.
Well, yeah, in negotiations with other sports investors and other groups and companies, rather than partnering with the Saudis and LIV and trying to get the funding that they think they need to fight both the legal battle and to fight and compete with LIV. So I know there's ongoing, discussions with large companies here, U.S., to try to raise capital to do that. So I don't know how they do it, but they're going to have to find a way to have these either LIV go away or to find a way to make sure that LIV is playing four rounds. They have the quality of the players are there that, you know, you're not beating up on has-beens or nobodies. And because the world rankings is really what it comes down to, right?
Yeah.
So unless they're playing against the best, how do you rank them in the world rankings if they're not playing? First of all, you got to play four rounds. I mean, how do you get world ranking points if you don't play four rounds? I mean, how many times have you seen? And again, that's why guys like Taylor Gooch win. You know, you got to put three rounds together. Four rounds is a whole nother story. And the golf courses they're playing. So
I'll leave you with this. I feel bad for Rory McIlroy. He was the guy out in front being the voice of the PGA Tour. He made strong comments about LIV. I mean, he was the defender of the PGA Tour. Then this agreement took place. He was not given a heads up. It just feels like all those comments and all those strong words that he made public just were for naught because the PGA Tour ended up kind of sleeping with LIV Golf with this agreement last year. So Rory got a raw deal out of that. He deserved to be compensated for what he had done in the past.
No question. I mean, he got railroaded. That's that's tough. He went to bat, and he got, kind of just – I mean, that's business world. I mean, you know that working for a large company, because that's how it works, you know.
Tim, let's wrap things up by reminding folks the phone number at Blackthorn, the website, and if they need help with anything, I know the staff out there at Blackthorn is ready to assist them.
Yeah, 232-GOLF. Give us a call or blackthorngolf.com. It's got all of our information, and encourage everybody to take a look. And we've got a lot of different ways that you can enjoy Blackthorn. from practice facilities to lessons, to playing golf and having a burger and a beer. So come out and see us.
And blackthorngolf.com is the website.
That's right.
Very good. I'm going to come out, and I want to see you hit a couple of tee shots because I'm not buying this. You have to play the upper tees. So be prepared. I want the swing to be in great shape when I come see you.
All right.
Deal?
You bet. I'm going to hold you to that, yeah.
And maybe I should put pressure on you like I put pressure on Foster to, you know, go after the U.S. Senior Open, you know. Maybe that should be on your agenda as well because you got nothing else going on, right?
That's right. I thought you were going to surprise me tonight and invite him on the show, too, to reunite the crew.
Oh, well, there aren't enough microphones, I don't think, for that. Man, I don't know if the world can handle us one more time, but maybe we should try to hook that up sometime this summer. That would be actually a lot of fun. Hey, Tim, continued success out at Blackthorn Golf Club, 232 Golf, blackthorngolf.com. Think about the Blackthorn card, folks, when you are heading out to Blackthorn. It is a great opportunity to get out there and play Blackthorn. And, Tim, enjoy your weekend, and we will talk to you very soon.
Thanks for your time, Darren. Have a great night.
You too. That's Tim Firestone, the owner of Blackthorn Golf Club. Again, 232 Golf, blackthorngolf.com. 633 at Sports Radio 960 WS. All right, Abby, thank you very much. 639 at Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Always great to catch up with Blackthorn owner Tim Firestone on day one of the Masters. Bryson DeChambeau, 7 under par, 65 in the lead, one shot in front of the number one player in the world and former Masters champion, Scottie Scheffler, a 6 under par, 66. Max Homa from the U.S., making a push in the first round, 3 under par through 8 holes so far today. Last time I checked, Tiger Woods on the front nine was 1 under par. 20 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Well, we were supposed to be going to South Bend Cubs baseball in just a couple of moments, but South Bend and Wisconsin rained out tonight, so they're going to play a doubleheader tomorrow. It'll be 2 7-inning games between South Bend and the Timber Rattlers. You can hear both games on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. The pregame will start at 6:45. The first pitch of Game 1 of the doubleheader comes your way at 6 o'clock. So that means Sports Beat only 45 minutes tomorrow night here on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. And Sports Beat tonight is being brought to you by Budweiser and Ghost Energy. It's the feel-good energy drink we've all been waiting for, featuring Sour Patch Kids-inspired flavors. By Barnaby's of Mishawaka and Granger, now with 3 locations, serving Michiana's most favorite pizza since 1978. Bethel University Athletics, sign-ups for youth summer sports camps are underway. Visit bupilots.com for details. First State Bank, lend strength to our communities by devoting ourselves to helping local businesses grow and prosper. Let's get to our Twitter question of the day results from yesterday. It's our Sports Beat Inside Indy Sports Twitter X question of the day. You can find it weekdays on my Twitter X account at 960 Sports Beat. Last night we asked you, will Notre Dame quarterback Riley Leonard start at least 8 games during the 2024 regular season? Transfer from Duke, got a really good NIL deal, allegedly, and comes to South Bend to be the starter, but the ankle injury that he suffered against Notre Dame last September, thanks to a tackle by Howard Cross of the Irish, has led to 2 ankle surgeries, including a second within the last couple of weeks, knocking him out, it appears, for the rest of spring practice. Now, he is doing some things. It's not like he's just standing on the sideline. He is involved, but not out there in scrimmage situations, obviously. So this is a guy that can throw the football, but also is known to be very creative and powerful running the football. So you need good wheels in order to do that. So we asked the question about, will Riley Leonard start at least 8 games this year? You have to worry about injury. You have to factor in Steve Angeli is someone that we all believe, I think, that is very capable of running this Irish offense at a very high level. So there are a couple of components that you can think about when deciding which way to go. So will Riley Leonard start at least 8 games for the Irish during the regular season? It was a lopsided vote. 75% believe that Riley Leonard will start at least 8 games this year. They're not worried about the ankle surgeries. I'm sure they have a lot of respect for Steve Angeli, but I think there's just that belief, and rightfully so. You bring in a quarterback to be your starting quarterback. You don't bring in a quarterback to hold the clipboard. So the expectation is Riley's going to start. You feel that way, and you're not worried about the ankle. So 75% said yes, Riley will start at least 8 games during the regular season. 25% said no. We appreciate your responses to our Twitter X question of the day from Wednesday. Now to today's question. What is the most important development that could occur over the remainder of Notre Dame football spring practice? There are 9 days left. Here are your 4 choices. Offensive line development, pass rush, wide receiver speed translating into production, and Bowen KVA, the young guys, battling at the Mike linebacker spot. So what might be the most important development that could occur over the remainder of spring practice? Offensive line, pass rush, wide receiver, Mike linebacker. You can vote right now on my Twitter X account at 960SportsBeat. Before we wrap up this segment, a quick reminder of a couple of headlines from today. The shocker, Notre Dame freshman guard Marcus Burton has entered his name into the NBA draft, but based on his statement that came out on social media, I think it is fair to conclude that this is about gathering information, having enough NBA personnel take a look at his game, and when you go through the draft evaluation process, you kind of get a grade. Like, you need to work on this, you need to work on that. We like this, but can you do this? So this is a great opportunity to just for executives at the highest level to analyze your game so you can work on those things which might help you in the future in the eyes of NBA executives, but also, and more importantly right now, help him to become an even better player at the college level for the Fighting Irish. 17 points per game this year, 143 assists, 63 steals, leading Notre Dame in all those categories. And the Penn grad has until May 30th to pull his name out of the draft, and then he can come back to Notre Dame for his sophomore season. And on the women's side, center Nat Marshall has entered her name into the transfer portal. She wrote today, "It's time to move on from Notre Dame. An opportunity to play elsewhere. Played key minutes in the postseason. Started her first games when they needed her most in the postseason. 5 points, 3.7 rebounds per game." Nat Marshall is the second Notre Dame women's basketball player to put their name into the transfer portal. 6:46 is our time. I'm Darren Pritchett. Our sports wagering segment is coming up next on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Hey everyone, Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.